This is the Past Lives Podcast, episode 203, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Past Lives Podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. And this is the free one-hour version of the episode. The extended episode is an hour and 30 minutes. And to get access to the extra 30 minutes and the other extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives Podcast Patreon campaign, when for $5 a month you get an extended episode every week, and for $2 a month you get an extended episode every month. And please check out my other podcast, it's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday, and you can find it on almost every podcast app. And there is also a new $12.50 Patreon tier, where every week you can get the extended episodes of the Past Lives Podcast and the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes. And there are now 47 extended episodes available to the $5 patrons. And you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. Also, when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you're a patron, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. Also, look out for the new podcast episodes. They are called Paranormal Stories, and I release a new one every Thursday. The links are in the show notes, and you can find the show notes for this and every other episode on my website. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And this week I'm talking to DJ Kadagian about his book, The Crossover Experience, Life After Death is Real. DJ is an award-winning documentary filmmaker, author and quantum economist. His films have aired on PBS, Gaia TV, the Discovery Channel and Hallmark, as well as being featured at over 120 film festivals around the world. In his works, he has collaborated with some of the country's top philosophers, academics, activists, poets, researchers and theologians. He is a graduate of Cornell University and a member of the Directors Guild of America. And for this book, he researched thousands of the most exceptional near-death experiences. Well, hi, DJ. Thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you, Simon, for having me.
We're talking about the book. It's called The Crossover Experience, Life After Death is Real. You've written it with two other guys, Dr. Pim van Lommel and Gregory Shujan. Could you tell us who they are and what they did in the book?
Sure. Well, Dr. Pim van Lommel started pretty much at the same time as Raymond Moody in really researching the whole phenomenon. He was a cardiologist out of the Netherlands, and he started noticing some of his patients explaining these experiences they had, and he didn't know really what to do with them and how to put them together, but he started to hear enough about them and question a number of his colleagues that he started to really look into it. And so that began his journey, and he published probably the most important research paper. It was actually peer-reviewed, published in The Lancet. And I think that was published in a little after 2000. But he also wrote the book Consciousness Beyond Death. And I would say that it's the best all-around book on the near-death experience, because he gets so into the research that he did. He looks at both... he looks at testimonials. He looks at quantum mechanics, physics, to kind of express how, if we look through that prism, we see so much that is actually, we know is real. And he applies that to what people are experiencing in the near-death experience. So it's a great broad book. And I'm sorry, it's Consciousness Beyond Life. And Pim van Lommel, your listeners can find it on Amazon. And it sold hundreds of thousands of copies. So he was really right alongside Raymond Moody, but he had a little bit more of a research approach to it as well. He has on our website, which is crossoverexperience.com, spelled out fully. I have links to his research papers, which are fantastic. And they're also links to interviews with him. And I would encourage anyone who's interested in this field, in this phenomenon, to really read through and also watch his interviews. They're really fascinating, and you get a real sense just watching him how much he enjoys the spending time in that universe, how it's changed him and his understanding of death. And you'll hear how his colleagues back then, there was really a lot of pushback and really kind of, he went through a difficult time in his field by speaking about it. And so he stopped talking about it unless someone was actually very interested, and then he would lay it out there. So that's Dr. Van Lommel. And Gregory really is from the academic side. I'd say he's agnostic still towards the NDE, which I kind of appreciate. And I think it was important to have that in there. He looks at the near-death experience through the prism of indigenous cultures, different religions over vast amounts of time, and how they're really very, very similar, how they were interpreted somewhat differently based on the culture. In terms of instead of experiencing, for example, the tunnel and going through and into this world, they might experience it going down a river, like an American Indian. With the Asian cultures, particularly in Japan, they describe going into a cave. So the movement and the, and I guess you could say the symbolism is different, but it's really very, very similar what's happening. And I look at what's happening in a lot of these near-death experiences, and it's one of the things that inspired me to write this book, is as seeing a lot of it as metaphor, but metaphor really in its truest sense, because it means so much and it helps people express what they're seeing, I believe, at not just a deeper level, but in a language that they can understand, because they're trying to piece together and express what they experienced. So we had a researcher and an academic, the researcher coming from within the field of medicine and cardiology, where he experienced it firsthand and through conversations with his colleagues, and Gregory, and he also came to this the near-death experience. He was really influenced by Raymond Moody, and that really kind of pushed him into that field, and they've pretty much stayed in it, and they're very interesting. Also, Gregory has some interviews that are also on YouTube, and I have links on the website. So the website kind of gives a real strong foundation and points people in the direction of research papers or lectures by researchers, testimonials, people that have been there, really some exceptional ones that I've tracked down, and through the scientific, purely scientific method, where it really focuses on quantum mechanics and how that relates. I think those are kind of the best three tiers. So that can be found in the site. And I tried not to include too much in terms of statistics in the book, because it's all out there. And I didn't want to get bogged down in that so much as really dive into the kind of the micro picture in these near-death experiences, because I found read through so many of these testimonials, and to find the content in the book, I read through thousands of them. So you not only start to see a macro picture, but you really start to see details and fine details that I really hadn't heard expressed by either the people giving the testimonials, even though there were hints of them there, but by the people that were writing the books or giving the lectures that didn't have testimonials. And I think that those details, and a lot of them I would say are metaphor, are extremely important. And those really need to be unearthed and really wrestled with for a little bit. And that's really what the point was, for me, and also kind of getting Pim and Gregory to look at that as well, because I don't think they really, I hadn't seen them able to look at these types of things at really the micro level. And you get a very, very different picture. Not a very different, but a deeper, richer picture. And it starts to help explain, I believe, some of the main events, as I would call them, that are happening in the near-death experience.
And your background is kind of analysis, isn't it? Looking at statistics and patterns and things.
Yeah. What pays the bills over the years had been in finance. And I would say you would describe what I do as quantum economics, which is crunching massive amounts of data. And I would create, I still do it, what I would call trading programs. And so I look for patterns similar to what I was doing when I was studying the near-death experience. I look for patterns both at the micro and the macro level. The macro is what gives you the full range, really, of what's happening. You start to see in the markets waves, and the waves represent emotion, human emotion. And then you dive deeper into the specific numbers, and then the waves start to make sense. And then you can find very specific patterns, and that's how I approach the markets. And I work in both commodities and the equity markets. And I see things very, in a very nonlinear way, which I think is really important, you know, kind of putting lots of pieces together. And over time, they kind of distill into a more coherent story, I guess you'd say, for me. And then I do a lot of film work, which suited me because it's all nonlinear editing and, again, images. And most of what I've done in film is very image-like, experiential, and music and image. And then I might do it set to poetry or even just a traditional documentary, which I kind of weave it more into experiential. So between an analytic background and that image-driven film work that I've done, that's kind of how I experience the world. It's a little bit different, but one of the strengths I have, if it's a strength, is really seeing. Like, I would read these testimonials, and it was literally like I was there. And so the little details that they gave me became the most interesting of the entire picture, because the main events in these near-death experiences were really unearthed 50 years ago by Raymond Moody, Pim Van Lommel, Peter Fenwick. He's also someone I'd recommend. His interviews are fantastic. It seems like most of the people that are very interested in this field are somewhat happy and calm. You know, their disposition is different. So it's nice to spend time watching, not just reading their works, because you really get the texture and you see the, you hear the inflection in their voice and the expression on their face, similar to, obviously, to the people that have near-death experiences. And that's where you really get pulled into the whole world there. So I came to it because I also came across Raymond Moody's work. And this was probably 25 years ago. I was really, my business had been doing nicely, and I was able to kind of spend more time on other interests. And by coincidence, I ran into Joseph Campbell's work. He was kind of the lead authority on mythology. And then also Houston Smith, who was considered the lead scholar on world religious studies. And the more I got into both of them, there was so much about death, both in afterlife, both in some cases literal, in some cases metaphor. And I really spent some time kind of in the world of Buddhism, which is also, you know, the Four Noble Truths are very interesting, you know, non-permanence and such. Life is suffering. And I think I had a very intense fear of death. I grew up in a bit of a war zone. So there was, you know, that whole, you know, the world could crash down on you at any moment. And so I carried a lot of that. And so once I started learning how to maybe read the tea leaves a little better, when I immersed myself in mythology and world religions, I became interested in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which I spent time with, which for some reason led me to the Book of the Dead that was written by Timothy Leary, Richard Albert, who became Ram Dass, and that was the Tibetan Book of the Dead, but it expressed it through the psychedelic experience, which fascinated me, and that led me to Terence McKenna, who was like the godfather of the psychedelic movement, and he really kind of rejuvenated it. I think Timothy Leary really crashed the whole thing, and the merry pranksters, as they call them, really turned these things that were really life-altering entheogens, they call them, religious plants, and it became kind of a party for Timothy Leary especially, and then out on the West Coast, and so that whole thing kind of crashed, but Terence McKenna really kind of brought back the potential of that movement. And that got me very interested in, again, it was just the third leg, you know, mythology, religion, and psychedelics used in a responsible way. This is my cat. I'm going to take over here. Siberian. So I might be rambling here. But that really got me interested in the field of the near-death experience. The problem was back then was that it was there just wasn't enough research that I could work with. When I create a trading program, I have to go back and look at least 15 years worth of data, because prior to that, there's just not enough. You know, you need to see crashes and huge rallies and all kinds of things that give you a really large picture of how a system works. And there really wasn't enough of that on the near-death experience for me to really, it sounded amazing and it sounded like too good to be true, but there wasn't enough information. There really weren't the YouTube videos, or I didn't come across the books, the testimonials, nothing like that. So it was really a lot of years that I had a bit of a spiritual journey. I went to the desert to sit on a rock and dissolve the ego death. And I went to Peru for the ayahuasca ceremonies with the real deal shaman. And that's a whole book in itself. And then most recently, about a year and a half ago, my son passed away. Pretty tragic, still not fully recovered. But maybe 3 or 4 weeks into it, my wife gave me a workbook, and which is not something I would ever look at. But, you know, went through all different, you know, reincarnation and, you know, spirit world, past life regression. And then there was a portion of the book that was a near-death experience. And so I read it and it was interesting, but it also had a link to a series of interviews, testimonials. And I started watching them all, and I watched one in particular, and it just blew my mind. And it was more, there wasn't research there, but I think when you're approaching something like the near-death experience, I kind of say you have to fall in love with it first to give you enough motivation to go through the energy of doing, say, the hard work of really breaking it down, at least for me, the way that my system, my process works. But it was, you know, the inflection in their voice, again, the expression on their faces. You could see there wasn't an agenda, and the consistency between stories was really fantastic. And the more I read, the more I saw that. And I said, well, there's something going on here. And I understood dream world. I was very interested in Carl Jung, and these aren't dreams. I had a lot of experience with DMT, and we speak of, you know, DMT and the brain and the dying brain, and the experience is very different from the near-death experience. you know, being in sweat lodges, sitting on a rock. And it's just, none of these are really like this in a number of different ways. So that was it for me. I really started saying, okay, let me look at the research. And in particular for this book, NDERF, Near Death Experience Research Foundation. I have links on the website, and a lot of their research is there, and testimonial videos. There are about 5,000 testimonials that are on the site. And really, that's the backbone of this book. And it took months of going through them to really sift out what I felt were not just the most exceptional near-death experiences, but they really had to follow, get through a certain screener. And I hadn't had a near-death experience, obviously, but I know enough about statistics where, you know, I said, you know, I thought the most important thing in this book was that everyone had experienced clinical death, and almost all of them experienced it in a hospital setting. Or they might have been outside of a hospital, but there was either a doctor that was present or the EMTs were there that could say this was clinical death. And I thought that was very, very important. And anyway, in a roundabout way, I came to it through a very winding path.
Hello, listeners. This is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyze what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. Specifically, what were the screeners that you applied to these? Because I think you said was it 5,000 NDEs that you read, but there's 200 testimonials in the book. So how did you decide which testimonials get in and which don't?
Well, the first is, as I said, the clinical death. And so that eliminated an enormous amount of them. Some of them, these are written retrospective testimonials that were given on site anonymously, and there was a very detailed questionnaire. So, you know, looking at it the way I look at not just numbers, but also probably I would say the why would somebody give these types of testimonials if they were anonymously, they didn't seem to have an agenda. They were all very, very similar, whether they had clinical death or not. But I thought that was very, very important. And that eliminated a lot of them. I couldn't take anyone that said, I think I might have had clinical death, or they said some of them had near-death experiences, even though they didn't have any physical experience, if they thought that they had a chance of dying in a car crash that didn't actually happen, you know, those types of things. If there were any events that are really outside of the norm, very outside of the norm, for example, if they saw UFOs or things of that nature, I wouldn't consider them. And not that I'm the final arbiter, but I just felt there were certain things I didn't. I passed on NDEs that happened to children under 14. I just felt like the younger children, when they had them, they were generally interpreted. Well, they were interpreted. There was a filter between them and, say, their parents, so that I felt that they might have been influenced a little bit, certainly the younger children. How do they express those things? And if a parent had a religious background or was an atheist and so forth, you know, that's going to color the testimonial. I didn't include anyone who had had more than one near-death experience unless they happen, you know, at this, you know, very, very closely, for example, in a hospital setting and, you know, they had a second cardiac arrest or something of that nature. And I'm not sure why. I just felt like to a certain degree, and I'm sure it's happened, you know, some people have, you know, have said they had three near-death experiences and one happened when they were a child and one happened, you know, they're hit by lightning two or three times, and that's all possible. But I just felt like there was no need to, you know, include that because I really wanted, if people came back and looked at that, they said, okay, these are all clinical deaths. In the book, there are there's a link to every single testimonial that's in the book. So you can read the full testimonial. They're much larger. I included particular sections. And if you read the ebook, there's actually live links that'll take you directly to the page. And that's really interesting. I wrote in the book, it's called The Methodology, and there are a number of other screeners that I had. And again, this was just, I just wanted to make it as bulletproof as I could in terms of everything I've read about the near-death experience, because I have to say I was somewhat skeptical if someone had had three or four near-death experiences, certainly if they saw UFOs, it just doesn't, you know, fit. You know, I had a lot of people when I was in Peru with the ayahuasca experience, and there were a lot of UFOs flying around in the tambo, as they call it. And I do believe they experienced those. I didn't see any myself. But those are not part of the near-death experiences, as you know, when you read through thousands of these things. And I'm trying to find the methodology section. But if you look at that, there's about six or seven screeners that are in there.
You have two chapters called A Crossover Experience. How did you put those together?
It took a long time. If you listen to testimonials, I never heard one that really went through all of the components, like the tunnel experience, into the light, having a life review, meeting a godlike figure, experiencing or walking through a city. So there are a number of components to a near-death experience that we probably are all aware of. I never heard a testimonial that encompassed all of those, and a few other that are a little more subtle that we don't necessarily talk about as much or have heard as much about, but exist. So what I wanted to do was take the strongest components of each of these experiences and walk through them as one story. For example, if somebody had a near-death experience, you know, the out-of-body experience into the tunnel and on from there, that they experienced the entire thing. And so these, it's like I say, you know, one person tosses the baton to the next person. So the experience keeps going. And I think that that's very, very powerful because most of the most well-known testimonials or books that are out there, for example, Evan Alexander or Anita Morjani, the list goes on, Jeffrey Olson, but none of them have had all of the experiences. And quite frankly, I don't know that I would. I've never seen it. So what I wanted to do was create the entire experience. And so that's what a crossover experience is, the entire experience, so that you see the entire thing by people that all had clinical deaths, that each one might have had three things that they experienced, but none had the entire story. And to me, that's where I feel like, you know, that's where the richness of what the near-death experience is really shines through. And we get an understanding. We see not just the macro picture, but kind of the rhythms, the waves that are happening during the experience. and different people express certain elements of them differently. And I think it's important to look at these experience testimonials in written form, which is where they come from. The written form tends to be more descriptive than speaking form. And if they're given anonymously and they're written out, you get more detail. And so I found that there was a lot more detail in the testimonials that were on this website in books that I read. I did transcribe a fair amount of lectures or even YouTube videos. You can see where you just get just incredible detail. And that's what happened. That's what I did with each chapter, where then we focused on a specific component, like the tunnel experience only. And we'd have, say, 20 testimonials for just that. And you start to see the similarities, certain patterns, certain nuances, certain experiences, like the tunnel experience is probably the one that has the least amount of commonality. It's quite different in terms of what is the size of the tunnel? What is the color? What is the, you know, is it long? Is it short? Do they walk through it, or is there floating? Do they meet somebody in the tunnel? That's the one where you don't have really a coherent story. It makes a little bit of sense because that's where the person has just basically been pulled out of their body. And so there's going to be a moment or more where they're essentially trying to get their bearings in a whole other world. It's also the part of the experience where if there is a hellish experience, as they call it, that's generally where it will happen. And again, that kind of makes sense. The reporting of the hellish experiences, they say around 1-2%. My guess is it actually happens in somewhat larger numbers. I think people that have that experience are probably less inclined to really talk about it. But one of the interesting things about that experience is most of them resolve positively. They continue to move on. But they say that experience is very difficult. And some that don't move on have had, you know, really difficult times afterwards. So basically the crossover takes you through a story. There's one full story in the beginning. Then we look at each component and really break them down. And then there's a final story at the end when you've really kind of have a better sense and have experienced them yourself. We tried not to say that in our comments at the end of each chapter, which is how it works, after we have a chapter on one subject, say the tunnel, the three of us would then give our interpretation of what would happen. And we're very careful to say, this is not the only interpretation. This is purely how we look at it. And you need to look at it through your own eyes. And again, in my opinion, so much of it comes down to metaphor. I think people hear metaphor and they think that, you know, it's not real, but like as Joseph Campbell would say, it's more real than real. And it speaks to people at different levels, wherever they are. And that's where the great teachers spoke, you know, in metaphor, because they didn't know who was in front of them. And it's how they had such, you know, strong following, because they were able to speak to the entire crowd in front of them. I wanted to leave it to the person who is reading this to experience it themselves. And then here are some potential ideas from the researcher, from the scholar, and then from somebody with the statistical background. And that might open another idea and say, you know what, I did see how when they were in this library studying, and that doesn't completely work from, I don't understand it, because we hear when they come back that I was given all the knowledge of the universe, but then I forgot it when I came back. They may hold on to pieces of it, but most of it is lost. But then when they're there, they walk through, say, a library, and that's fairly common. They describe the library, somewhat, similarly. But then my question is, well, if they have stayed and they've learned everything, the entire universe. What are they studying? I mean, there's so much more that they're studying, even though they have all of the knowledge of the universe, the people that came back. So there has to be more. And so that's interesting. It's quite possible. We can't even, the world is not only stranger than we imagine, it's stranger than we can imagine. And there's just no way we can interpret what they may be looking at. That's something I find very interesting. I find very interesting, how is it, and again, I'm reading thousands of these, how is, and it's not talked about because I think people might be uncomfortable. How is it that people that go into this realm never meet their spouse? Never. In all the ones that I read, nobody talks about it because it may sound, you know, it's heartbreaking or how could this be? But, you know, when you cross over, there's more beyond that. But none of the people that have had a near-death experience and come back, have had a real full-blown, they were there, have seen a spouse. Now, a lot of these are older, and so a spouse has predeceased them, but they don't see them. That's fascinating to me. What does it mean? I have no idea. What does it mean to you? I mean, I think there's it goes beyond. They talk about almost these buildings that are transit stations taking people somewhere else. They don't talk about where they're going. And the interesting thing is, which I also find, is that when they're in these libraries and around these people or in these way stations, they never ask them, where are you going or what are you studying? They're always with someone, a guide kind of walking them around, but they never ask these questions. So there are a lot of questions that are never asked. Why? I would be fascinated. I would be asking a million questions, but they aren't. Those questions aren't asked. And so these are the little details that I see all over. But one of the most fascinating that I started to read is that one of the first things that they look at with wonder, that they're really exposed to when they come out of the tunnel, oftentimes it's into a beautiful environment, normally like a park-like setting, and there might be people in it, or it might just be, and there might be flowers and trees. But so many of the people's, the thing that they talk about most is the grass. And I look at that, I'm like, how is that possible? I mean, why grass? I mean, the flowers are there, the trees, but if you were taking it statistically, that would be far and away in terms of the natural environment, what they speak about. They rarely really speak about, say, birds. They talk about flowers, but never bees. In all of the testimonials that I read, no one ever described meeting one of their pets. And why is that? Now, you know, some people will talk about that, or they, but I'm saying with what I saw, and I read through thousands of these, it just wasn't there. There's so many things, though, that are there that I think these fine details, that if you brought them out, you'd say, oh, wow, you know, some of these things make more sense, and there's a little bit more going on than what we hear about, because the main events are so overpowering. That we don't look at those fine details that really flesh out the whole picture. But that's why I felt like the crossover, the entire arc of the story, can really pull somebody in. And I experience it visually when I read something like that. I feel like I'm there. And so that's what I tried to give the reader, really pull them in. And it's a whole story. Each one is maybe 30 pages, so it's not... It's. I find it really fascinating that way.
Did you come across many veridical NDEs, where they could give details of something that happened while they were clinically dead, that was proven to be true?
Well, so many of them really were. There's two ways you'll see that distinctly. One is the first thing, you know, most of them have is an out of body experience. They come out of their bodies and they're looking down at their bodies and, you know, what's happening around them. And they're very fascinated by it. They spend a lot of time, and they don't just, hear what they're saying, but they feel what they're feeling. And sometimes they think it's somewhat funny that they're trying to revive this person that has no interest in coming back. Sometimes they feel badly for them because, you know, because they see how frantic they are. So there's that experience. And oftentimes when they come back, they'll say, you know, I saw you move this pen and you wrote something on the screen over here. And I also saw, you know, that just this person dropped one of the surgical tools, and it's accurate. That's happened a lot. And there's one doctor's fantastic testimonial. I forget his name, but he's a heart surgeon. His is on the website. I would say it's one of the most important testimonials I've ever heard. And it's a doctor. He passed away sometime back. But what he said about a couple of patients he had that absolutely blew him away. For example, they had, and this is an extremely credible doctor, very, you know, kind of world famous doctor, no reason to put this out there. But he had a patient come in, and when they come in for certain procedures, they'll have their ears plugged and their eyes sealed over with their head facing straight up. And after the procedure, the person said, I saw you putting those stickers on the on that terminal over there. Well, the stickers weren't there when they rolled her in. She was clinically dead. There's absolutely no way that that could have happened. But this person gave a number of examples of what happened, and they were accurate. But that happens quite often. The other one that I find really interesting is that a fairly large percent, as in 80%, but I would say, you know, like 4%, which based on what actually happened is quite a high percent, that the only people that they see when they're having a near-death experience are people that are gone, they're dead, they're on the other side. They never see people that are alive, ever. When they've said, oh, I saw Uncle so-and-so over there, they didn't know before they went to the other side that this person had already died. They just had no idea. And they saw them there, and they came back, and they said, oh, I saw so-and-so there. So they never have that experience of seeing somebody that was living. And so that's really, in my opinion, that is equally as has equal weight of what people see when they're in their out-of-body experience and still in the hospital room. And there are other things that happen like that. People that have moved through hospital room, the hospital hallways, and saw their father or uncle or what have you, and you know, huddled around and eating a candy bar or these types of things, and telling them when they get back, and it's accurate. From a quantum mechanics standpoint, these things are all very real, possible, proven from, you look at a lot of what Einstein, you know, some of the things that that he pulled out of his hat, and they're being proven now. I mean, and as we become more advanced, really starting to open that whole world, you start to see, you know, these things are all explainable, repeatable. I don't know. There are things that are happening there that certainly will never be able to fully prove it. I don't believe, you know, other than sending a probe, you know, how do you prove it? But, you know, the statistical significance of what's happening, that's coming back, is overwhelming. It's overwhelming. I mean, so, but yes, there are so many examples of people coming back and giving a story and circumstances that happened that they could not possibly have known when they came back. They just couldn't have known it. And by the way, I'm sorry, when you, again, speaking to DMT, people having DMT and, you know, that being released in the brain and so on, That's like one of the strongest arguments that critics have in explaining a near-death experience. And I would recommend that any one of them go down to Peru and take DMT, whether it's ayahuasca or whatever. And in that state, more often you see people that are alive. You see relatives, you encounter relatives more. That's never anything you hear in a near-death experience. That's radically different. So you take that piece, you take the piece that a skeptic will talk about, for example, dreams. Carl Jung had a near-death experience he wrote about in his biography. It's fantastic. Near-death experience. And he said specifically that there, I'm not saying, I'm recounting it word for word, but that it's nothing like a dream. And this is a person who, you know, who really brought us the concept of collective consciousness. Obviously, no one knows more about dreams, I would think. And the symbolism and so forth that we experience in dreams, and how, what we bring back from dreams, what we forget, how we forget them. And he said, these are not, you know, nothing like that. So you kind of start knocking down, you know, some of these arguments, and you look at the statistics. You know, I don't know exactly what's going on, but you have a really hard time convincing me that something is really real. And the only thing we can do, I believe, at this point, I shouldn't say this because I'm not the expert. We're not going to learn anything new about the near-death experience in terms of what happens on the other side that we didn't already know 50 years ago through Raymond Moody, Pim Van Lommel. All of these experiences have been recorded, say, 50 years ago. You know, what I hadn't seen, and it's not a criticism, it's just how my mind works, is really breaking these down and looking at the details. And when you look at that and you start to say, you know, what might be metaphor, what might be just the way we can possibly interpret something that's so fantastic based on, you know, where we come from and how we understand the world, and factor that in and look at where there's that crossover, I really think that that's where so much more can be learned from that. Beyond that, we kind of know everything. And so people are either going to believe it, they'll question it, or they'll never believe it. But it's pretty much all out there right now. And it's the two biggest stories in the world, and I think you would know the other one, is we now see the UFOs are real. And I don't want to sound like, you know, I don't want that to take away from my interest in the near-death experience. But when the Department of Defense comes out, shows the video and says these are real, they're real. And people still aren't going to believe it. And I think we're between the UFO phenomenon, which is now proven to be real, and the near-death experience, I don't see anything. These are the biggest stories in human history, I believe. They're right there. And there's real data and personal experience with all of these things. And if you really look at them, the world is much more interesting than we can possibly know, you know, imagine.
So I got a question for you, which is probably impossible to answer, but in the book you say only 15% of those resuscitated have a near-death experience. So why do you think some people have them and some don't?
Well, you know, I asked Pim about that because that's a question I had. And part of it, he said that they may not have been out long enough to have experienced parts of it. The other is he mentioned that if you talk to children that had them, very, very high numbers experienced that relative to the how many have experienced clinical death. And his feeling to a certain degree is that as we get older, you know, we become a little more rigid in how we experience things. Some people become more open, but more often than not, we see people become much, I don't know what the word would be, not as open to these kinds of possibilities. There's more also fear. And that it's quite possible that they experienced some parts of it, but you will hear many people that will never talk about it. They just think, A, people are going to think they're crazy, or they think they're crazy themselves. So similar to people that have had a hellish experience, and the numbers are probably higher than the statistics show, my guess is that there are a lot of people out there that have had them that won't talk about them. So if we hear that there's, say, 15%, I would assume that those numbers are, you know, they're, I don't want to put a number on it, obviously, but I've heard enough from people that have gone to some of these gatherings, say IANDS has a lot of these, International Association of Near-Death Experience, and they're all over the United States, really all over the world now. And some people will find their way into these places that had one 20, 30 years ago, and they might start mentioning it. And it's very common to hear them say, I've never spoken to anyone about this, because they're going to think I'm crazy. And that's something very, very common that you'll hear. And then others, again, that are, I don't know what happened. It was a dream. It was, who knows what happened. So again, I think the numbers are significantly higher. But then, you know, there are people that A, may not have been out long enough. Their circumstances might have been different. So that's what makes, and people are just closed down at all levels, even on the other side, where they're just too tight. You know, something like that's just not going to pierce their consciousness. They're just going to, you know, they want to forget about it. But, and then if you do factor in the hellish experiences too, which are probably higher, then, you know, that also probably moves those numbers up significantly.
We're out of time. The book's called The Crossover Experience, Life After Death is Real. So can you tell us about The Crossover Experience and the website?
Yes. I think what I did was I wanted to create kind of a hub where I took a lot of the websites out there focus on, you know, they may focus on the near-death experience and reincarnation and past life regression. And I really wanted to focus specifically on the near-death experience and try to hew as much as I could to, you know, the people that had clinical death. And then I broke it up between sections where you can find video testimonials that I curated pretty well. Most of them I've watched many times. And then video with researchers, and then video with scientists, really getting more into the quantum mechanics of the, which I think is really important to look into. It can become overwhelming, make no sense, but there are, and again, I on YouTube, you can find very, very clear explanations, get you as close as you can to having some sense of quantum mechanics, quantum physics, because, you know, that's kind of the proving ground. That's how we know some of these things are possible, not just possible, but proven. Again, we might not be able to experience them ourselves, but they exist. That these are real. There's also a section on the site that has links to all the, again, not on the Arbiter, but the books that really were important to me. And these are books that are either testimonials. Jeff Olson's is on there. Research, like Pim's book, is on there, and Gregory Shushin's, but also the major organizations that really focus on the near-death experience. There's a short film that I did on the near-death experience, documentary style. Again, it's music and image, so it's kind of experiential. But I put that on, and it was, I think there's 300,000 views, and it was really, you know, because the interest is really strong. So I really like the way that turned out. So you can go to the website, and it's on the website, along with all these other videos. There's a kind of a moving slideshow of the different, you know, walking through a near-death experience as well. I wanted it to become a hub. There, again, there's also links to research reports, scientific reports, things like that. So if you really want to learn about it, if I really wanted to learn about it, that would be my first stop. I think it's really well put together. It connects to our YouTube page, the Crossovers YouTube page, which has a whole lot more video. I kind of cherry picked the ones for the website, but it'll take you to really a whole YouTube channel that has, once you start, you'll want to watch all of these. They're my favorite ones, and I've watched them all many, many, many times. So I would encourage someone, whether they read the book or not, that they can learn a lot on that site. And oftentimes I'm pointing to people that are smarter than me, have had near-death experiences, have been in that world for longer than me. I just, from how my mind works, I tried to put together, kind of a resource where you can kind of find anything, related to the near-death experience and kind of get you going if you have an interest. Whether you believe in it or will ever believe in it or not, it's not a bad place to start.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. And do you think you'll be doing another book?
It took so long, the reading these testimonials and going through them, that I actually started another book to take a break from this book. But okay. It's about as radically different than this than I could get. I don't know if I'm possibly a documentary. That's really kind of more my background than being an author, that I'm new to. So I might do at some point a feature length documentary or a series on the near death experience. I think there'd be a lot of interest. There's quite a bit of it out there. I tend to do things a little different. I don't want to do something if it's already kind of been done. They're hard to finish too. So I don't know. Maybe if you asked me in 6 months, I'd say yeah, definitely. Right now, I'm shot.
All right. Okay.
I want to go back to reading them. Like I want to read the book just because I want to read the distilled testimonials that really moved me. Because when you start researching and you're just looking and looking and looking, you kind of lose perspective and it's not as fun anymore. It's not as moving. So I really want to come back, because it's been a long time since I've really just watched these things, testimonials, and read. That's what I want to do for a while, because that I just really enjoy that. So maybe after that I'll get motivated again.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been great talking to you.
You too. Thank you very much for having me.
And that was an interview with DJ Kadagian about his book, The Crossover Experience, Life After Death is Real. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And this is the free 1 hour version of the episode. The extended episode is an hour and 30 minutes. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week and the back catalogue of extended episodes. Also, if you're a patron, you get a 25% discount when you book a past life regression session with me. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday. My Instagram is the Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word, and on Twitter I am at Simon G. Bown. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group. If you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.